are certainly minimal. Well, the first part of your question, how did it get off Mars? It's true. You throw a rock off up into the air, it comes back down. But if you could throw it fast enough, if you could throw it at about 7 or 8 miles a second, it wouldn't come back down, right? It would go out into space, right? That's what they did with the Apollo program. Now, just imagine the situation on Mars. You're sitting there, you're just part of Mars, okay? You're a rock on the ground, but in comes this meteor, okay? It slams into Mars at tremendous speed. It's a big thing. It's the size of a house. It kicks up a bunch of rock. Now Mars has a little less gravity than Earth, so it's easier for some of those pieces to fly off with sufficient speed that they escape Mars altogether. You with me so far?
Yeah, I'm sure people always ask you, could one of these asteroids or comets or something hit Earth and decimate the entire population?
Well, yes, that could happen too. And as a byproduct, we would kick bits of Earth into space. All right,
but okay, so now we got this rock from Mars from billions of years ago. It's floating around in space, and I imagine if you got a bunch of these particles, one of them could hit Antarctica.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, there are probably a large number of these rocks floating around. This particular rock floated around the solar system, say, for 16 million years. And then on the order of 13,000 years ago, it happened to hit the Earth. I mean, it was just, you know, that's a small probability that it's going to hit the Earth, but it did. An even smaller probability, of course, that it would happen to hit the Earth in Antarctica, which it did. But that's a good thing because, although Antarctica is not where you might want to spend your next summer vacation, Antarctica is, of course, covered with ice. So if you see a rock in Antarctica lying on top of the ice, you know it's got to be a meteorite. I mean,
now, how could it? Maybe a bird would fly and put it there. Maybe there was a volcano nearby that would spew it out. Or maybe some oil rig drove by and some guy knocked or threw a rock up on the ice. Couldn't that happen?
Well, there are some volcanoes in Antarctica, but not where they find these rocks to begin with. Look, the other thing you can do is you take this rock, you go analyze it, and you look at what it's made of, and you quickly determine that, hey, this is not Earth stuff. It's not an ordinary meteor, and it's not from the moon. In fact, it looks like what we think Mars is made of.
What is Mars made of?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of it is in fact rust. There's a lot of iron oxide in the
caramel,
soil there. That's why it looks red. All the water got locked up in the Martian surface. But it's made up of the similar sort of rocks that you find on Earth. But the thing is that there's a bit of the Martian atmosphere trapped in these pieces of rock. And the Martian atmosphere is not like our atmosphere. So that's one of the giveaways.
Really? Well, talking to Dr. Seth Shostak on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, I imagine this is your second stop after your big appearance on CNN tonight.
Well, I can tell you that women have been mobbing me ever since I was on that.
But Larry King hasn't snagged you yet, neither has Jim Bohannon, but we got you down here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
You got it.
How was your treatment in the green room there at CNN? I mean, did they have some bottled water for you? Did they feed you some finger food? What's that like? And did you meet Larry King?
Yeah, well, I didn't. No. Listen, this was all done up in San Francisco. The studio was about the size of your average walk-in closet.
And you're calling us from San Francisco tonight.
Sorry?
You are calling us from San Francisco tonight.
Well, in fact, a little bit south of San Francisco in the lovely city of Mountain View. But I went up to CNN. CNN is up in San Francisco, or at least the local studio. And all they fed me was some warm tea.
Warm tea? They can treat a big star better than that, especially one with breaking news about the first life found anywhere in the whole galaxy or universe outside of the planet Earth. Don't you think?
Well, I do, but it doesn't seem to have helped.
How big were these pieces of rock they found in Antarctica?
Well, this particular one, I must say, I haven't seen it up close and personal, but it's on the order of, it's like a foot in size, something like that. It may not even be that big, actually, because I'm not quite sure that I saw anything that would give me the scale. These things are not necessarily very big. They don't have to be very big. You just want them big enough that they have an inside that doesn't get exposed to all the traumatic things that happen to the outside.
I think most people will be surprised to find out that one-celled animals actually leave fossils.
Yeah, well, they do. They do. In fact, if you go to places like Yellowstone National Park or Mono Lake here in California, you find these big things called tufas, T-U-F-A's. It sounds like a tufa one special. That's not what they are. Tufas are big mounds made up of dead microorganisms. So, in fact, single-celled critters, when they get together and they die en masse, you do get some sort of fossils. And recall that on Mars, you don't have all these continents moving around to chew up all the rocks and obliterate the evidence.
So these rocks have just been around.
They've been around. And, you know, really the point is, and the listeners probably know this, but Mars used to be a kinder, gentler place. 3.5 billion years ago, there was running water on Mars. The atmosphere was a little nicer. The temperatures were better.
Now, how do we know that? Because all we know is what we see up there, right?
Yeah, yes, no, because you know that there was running water by just taking photographs of the Martian surface. We've done that. I mean, in the 1970s, we had, back when we could do stuff, we had spacecraft orbiting Mars taking thousands of photos. And if you look at these photos, you see what look like dry river beds and you know, old lakes that are all dried out and so forth. It's obvious that there used to be running water there.
They even got a face up there.
Well, I bought a 5-pound bag of potatoes last week at Safeway, and the face of Nixon was in there, too. I don't think that means anything.
We're talking to Dr. Seth Shostak from Project SETI about this breaking story, the meteorite from Mars that has microbe fossils on it. Now, what are these fossils of? Are they anything like microbes we got here on Earth, or are they just like E.T. and all the way out there?
Well, look, these are fossils. They're not, you know, like dinosaur bones or anything like that. They're very small. They're about the size of bacteria. You have to see them under, you know, if you find them under a microscope, they did that, and they look like, you know, little globules with what looks like a cell wall. Now, you know, I would caution the listeners to be a little bit skeptical, because this may or may not be definitive proof that there was life on Mars. It's certainly suggestive, but, you know, even the boss man at NASA isn't saying that this is the be-all and end-all proof that there was life on Mars, but it sure looks like old bacteria.
Now, is this the kind of bacteria, or are these whole cells?
They're single cells, yeah.
Right. Are these the kind of cells or bacteria or microbes that can live on their own and do their own thing, or are they the kind that maybe they're parasites or something and they would have to live in an ecosystem that might include another living organism much larger and complex than themselves?
Well, of course, we don't know that, but it's unlikely that they lived in a system where there was something bigger and better and more interesting, because remember, these guys date back more than 3.5 billion years, okay? And that's so early. Remember, Mars itself is only about 4.5 billion years old, so you know, this was in Mars's youth when these guys were around. At that point on the Earth, there were also microbes, but nothing more complicated. In fact, things that were bigger than one cell didn't appear on the Earth until very recently, less than 0.5 billion years ago. So if the same thing happened on Mars, believe me,
there weren't. Recent to you is a long time ago to me, brother.
There weren't any big guys there.
No dinosaurs or ETs or anything like that?
No, nothing even as big as a worm.
Now, you work for Project SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and you got those radio telescopes all over the world. You got a big one in Puerto Rico. Did these microbes phone ahead and tell you where to find the meteorite?
No, actually, you know, obviously, pointing a big radio telescope as we do to try and eavesdrop on alien transmissions, there's still no point in pointing these telescopes at Mars. I don't expect to find Martians, at least no Martians bigger than a pinprick. But what it does do is it shows you that life can spring up, even on, if it's sprung up on Mars, then it's sprung up on two planets in our solar system. Life's not a miracle. Life's just a statistic, and since there are probably 100 billion other planets in our galaxy, this suggests that we ought to keep listening, because some of them are going to cook up not just life, but life that's smart enough to build a radio transmitter.
Dr. Shostak, we have Terry Endress and Charles Stewart locally from the Tri-State TASC, which stands for Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge, and they have a couple of intriguing questions to pose to you.
Okay.
Have you been able to exclude any possibility that that this meteorite might have been contaminated once it reached Earth?
Well, that's a good question, of course. Now, I'm not the guy who did this research.
Right.
But one thing you can do in cases like this, an obvious thing to do, and I assume they have done it, but we'll hear that tomorrow, is that you can compare this meteorite with other meteorites that you find there. They find lots of meteorites in Antarctica. It's a great place to find meteorites, because essentially every time you find a rock sitting on the ice, it's a meteorite. Okay? And you can compare it with other meteorites that have been sitting on that ice as long as this one has.
Well, how long ago do they estimate that this thing landed?
About 13,000 years, if I recollect
correctly. 13,000 years ago, what was in Antarctica?
Ice. In fact, more ice than now.
Well, didn't they have forests back there at one time? Because
they have
mountains in Antarctica that's got, like, old pine trees on it.
Well, you find things like coal and so on, soft coal. Yeah, that's true, but it's not 13,000 years ago. You have to go back millions of years before we get to that. So Antarctica wasn't so much different 13,000 years ago. It probably was a little colder because it was the Ice Age. But this one's been sitting around for 13,000 years. So if you pick up other ones that have been sitting around for more or less the same time, break them open, and if they don't show this kind of what you might call contamination, then you can probably assume it's not contamination. It came with a rock.
Well, what do you suppose might have happened on Mars then to result in the rather barren environment that we see through the Viking probes?
Yeah, you mean what went wrong with Mars?
Yeah, what went wrong up there?
Well, the real problem Mars has, kind of like many of my friends, it's a little too small.
Yeah.
And that means that it cooled down fairly quickly. It's, you know, it's hot in the center too, just the way the Earth is, but it's not as hot because it's smaller, it cools down quicker. It's like a hummingbird compared to a giant turkey. A hummingbird cools down quicker. So that means that it doesn't have too much plate tectonics. It doesn't shift its surface around. And the consequence of that, when you think about it, is that you don't recycle the carbon dioxide into its atmosphere. Now, this gets kind of technical, but what that means is you don't get these greenhouse gases back into the atmosphere the way you do on Earth. So Mars began to get cold, and the water all froze into the surface. The atmosphere went away, and it got very cold. So Mars is a cold desert now. And fundamentally, the problem with Mars is that it's just a little too small. It's also a little farther from the sun.
Dr. Shostak, you work with Project SETI, which is radio waves, and this meteor with microbes is a biological, geographical thing. How did you get the job as the spokesperson for this?
Well, I'm not. Listen, you got me.
Somehow you got on CNN about this whole thing.
Well, listen.
Here's why I'm asking you that. Yeah, I want to give credit where credit is due. Who are the individuals that found this thing and broke it open and found these cells in it?
Well, I have their names here somewhere, but I don't have them right by the phone. Look, these are guys mostly at Johnson Space Flight Center. The first name on the paper is a guy by the name of David McKay. And there was also a grad student involved. There were some people at Stanford, some people at UCLA. And I think there's at least one other NASA person. So it's mostly NASA, Stanford, UCLA. I undoubtedly have missed a few people. You might say, why am I talking about it and not them? And that's really a good question. They should be talking about it, but they will tomorrow. Look, they're under embargo because they're trying to publish this, and they were told by NASA headquarters not to say anything about it in advance of the press conference, which is tomorrow.
At 1 o'clock, and it will be aired live on CNN, correct?
I don't know about it being aired live, but it is 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time tomorrow. Yeah.
Right. I saw an ad. CNN will be carrying it. So if you want to know more, ladies and gentlemen in Radio Land, tune in to CNN tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Yes, Doctor, I had a question about the meteorite.
Mm-hmm.
You said it was found laying on the top of the ice.
Right.
How would it be there after how many millions of years?
13,000.
Well, it's only been lying on the ice for about 13,000 years, as I understand.
Well, I can't understand how it would still be on the surface after all that time. It seems like a meteorite in the first place would burrow into the ice, and then it seems like it would be covered up after all that time.
Yeah, well, probably a lot of them are, actually. But you know, Antarctica, I mean, that's a really good question, and I'm not sure I have the entire answer to that. But Antarctica is pretty much a desert, you know. It doesn't snow there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It snows infrequently, so it doesn't usually get quickly buried. This was also in an area that there are some dry valleys where there's a lot of wind,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of scours the snow away. So I think that the total thickness of ice and snow in these areas is not very great. It's actually a good question. I should look into that more myself. But there are areas of Antarctica where you don't bury stuff immediately in the ice.
Okay. Dr. Seth Shostak with Project SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Let's talk about your work for a minute. How are things going at the SETI laboratories? And have you picked up any TV programs from far away yet?
Believe me, if we had, I would still be up in the CNN studio. Our project, which is called Project Phoenix, by the way, I'm with the SETI Institute, which is in California here, SETI Institute. Now, the project is called Phoenix, and the reason for that is it rose from the ashes of the old NASA SETI project. We're going to begin observing in another 2 months, not too far from you, in scenic West Virginia, where there's a large radio telescope in a town called Greenbank. And what we do is we point this telescope at nearby stars in the hopes of eavesdropping on any stellar radio traffic. But we haven't heard anything so far.
Terry Endress with TASC, Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge.
Yeah, I have a question. In the past couple of years, a couple of astronomers have been locating what they think are planets around some nearby stars. Has SETI any plans to point their antennas in those directions?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, there have been about a half dozen or maybe even a little more now planets found around other pretty nearby stars. These are stars that are within, you know, like 30 or 40 light years, so that's, you know, less than 100 trillion miles. That's not so far. I think my car has that. So, it turns out that essentially every one of those stars was already on our hit list of stars to observe, because we're looking at nearby stars that are like the sun, and almost every one of these was such a star. But you can be sure if it wasn't on the hit list, it is now. We haven't looked at any of them so far because they're in the Northern Hemisphere, but beginning in October, we will.
Well, would you hazard to maybe guess that planets around suns then are not uncommon?
Well, I think that the evidence for that is mounting essentially weekly that they're not uncommon. In fact, Jeff Marcy and Paul Butler here at San Francisco State, who've found the majority of these planets, estimate that at least 5% of the planets, of the stars, I'm sorry, that they look at have planets. But if you ask them what percentage of stars in general have planets, they'll say maybe half, maybe all. It's certainly 5 or 10% of all stars have planets, and maybe most of them do. So the bottom line, planets are a dime a dozen.
You sound like Woody Allen. How come you're out in San Francisco?
Well, I grew up in the East.
Uh-huh.
Where are you from, Seth?
Near Washington, D.C., Arlington, Virginia.
Really?
Yep.
And how do you like San Francisco after you've been living out there for a while?
Well, I commend California to you. I mean, obviously nothing can live up to Cincinnati's amenities and pleasures, but California's not bad.
Dr. Shostak, one last thing, and we'll let you go back to, you know, whoever wants to call you next, whether it's Larry King or NBC or CBS or ABC. This discovery of this meteorite and the supposition that there actually is life. Now maybe we got proof that there is life outside of the borders of this green, greasy planet Earth. Is this just a tiptoe towards that new age, that new millennium, that new discovery, or is this going to just propel us and catapult us into knowing that we are not the only ones around and change life as we know it and everybody's attitude towards extraterrestrial life and ET?
Well, I don't know, but I do think that if it turns out that this evidence holds up, and there is a bit of an if there, but if it does, I think that this is one of the most interesting scientific discoveries probably of the century, really, because...
Are you saying that tomorrow might be Independence Day?
No. Listen, these Martians have already come to Earth, and all they did was sit in a rock. They're not going to, you know, put big shadows across the cities of America or any place else. This is not advanced Martians. Now, mind you, there's an interesting point here which we didn't talk about, and that is that you know, these Martians are fossils from 3.5 billion with a B years ago, but you know their descendants might still be on Mars. That's not impossible.
You think maybe way underground in some kind of underground river or cave or something?
Exactly right. You know, the water is still liquid underground because there's some hot spots on Mars where it would stay liquid, and they may, you know, their descendants might still be there. So maybe Mars. You know, this is like War of the Worlds. You remember War of the Worlds? The Martians came to Earth to trash our cities. They invaded the Earth and they were destroyed by our bacteria. And I think it's kind of interesting that what this is saying is that the Martians have come to Earth and they are bacteria.
I think it sounds more like the Beast or the Thing, where Kurt Russell found that frozen stuff in Antarctica and thawed it out, and then it ate half the country.
You think the stuff will invade?
Doubtful, very doubtful. In fact, it may be. This is one other idea for you. You may want to ponder this. Obviously, rocks travel back and forth in the solar system. This is one example of it, and this just happened 16 million years ago. But, you know, 4 billion years ago, 3 billion years ago, the same thing was happening. In fact, it was happening more often. And it could be that life developed on Mars first, a chunk of rock got thrown off by a collision, just like this one did, lands on Earth and seeds the Earth, and we are the result. We could be the Martians.
We already knew that. That's where the face on Mars came from.
Well, I wouldn't put too much credence in the face on Mars, but it is an interesting thought that there's some sort of cross-pollination possible. Not saying it's happened. Could be.
Heck, we could even be from another galaxy or maybe even another dimension.
Well,
have you ever heard of the Unarius Academy of Science?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. You're missing a good time, man. Go to the library and look up Unarius Academy of Science and get back with me on what you find.
Okay.
These guys are wild. Anyway, thanks, Seth. That's Dr. Seth Shostak with Project SETI.
Project Phoenix of the SETI Institute.
That's right.
Right.
Mountain View, California. Thanks a lot, Doc.
Okay, it's been a great pleasure.
Catch you next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
To Chris and Rob, Late Night Talk Show. If you want to get in on this, the phone number is 749-1444. Chris and Rob with Terry Endress and Charles Stewart of TASC, Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, so stay tuned.
Safe to stay here. Your father's
going to
pick up our trail for
us. And
Locke
arrived.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, there we go. Thank you for everything.
Is there anybody out there?
Chris and Rob, Late Night Talk Show, Pink Floyd, 25 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning. We're having a good old time down here at the old WAFA. I'm Chris and he's Rob. We have Terry and Charles from TASC, Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge. You guys have a email address you'd like to pass on, don't you?
Yeah, what is that email address?
Okay, we have an email address.
Email is so weird.
That's TASK at fuse.net. If you send some information along to that, we can also give you an address to our website.
Now, what are you going to find when you dial this up on your old pewter?
Well, we're trying to keep posted some current information on UFO sightings in this area, as well as national stories, including UFO sightings near and around the TWA 800 crash.
You're saying a UFO shot down the TWA?
No, but there had been a lot of sightings in the area. Not necessarily a connection, but something worth looking at anyway.
Something sighted on radar that...
It was a missile shot up by some Arab. Everybody knows that. That's Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. The phone number is 749-1444. I'm just kidding, Rob. I'm just kidding. Hello, Tom. You're on the air.
Yeah. I just want to know, those things were found on a meteor, right?
Right.
On Mars? Well, if it's a meteor, then it's not from Mars. It fell to Mars from someplace else, probably the asteroid belt.
Well, as Dr. Shostak mentioned, the gravity on Mars is quite a bit less than what we have here, so the escape velocity isn't all that great. Just an impact from a large meteor would be able to break off a piece and send it into outer space. That's, that can even happen on the moon, because there, that's 1/6 gravity, and an impact can send pieces into space. So what he's saying is that a large impact on the surface of Mars threw off a few pieces of Martian surface and sent it out in space, and it floated around until it hit the gravitational field of Earth, and down it came.
So it's
possible. I'm sorry?
They found it on Earth then?
Yeah, it was found in the Antarctic.
Oh, okay.
Now do you get the big picture, Tom?
I understand. Thank you.
What do you think? You think it's for real?
It sounds for real. I don't know. It's just, it's about time they figured out something. I mean, it's been so long. I don't know. I used to be really into that stuff when I was a kid.
Tom, what do you think of the Unarius Academy of Science? Have you ever had a psychic link up with your past being from some other planet?
Not yet.
Well, keep working on it, man. Stay up late and think real hard, and it might come to you. All right. Well, thanks, Tom.
All right.
Take it easy.
Okay. We've been talking about like microorganisms and all that kind of stuff, and traveling through the planes of the universe and the mind and different dimensions. Let's get into some hardcore. Spaceship came down and probed somebody. When
yeah,
does that
everybody
happen?
Loves no, abduction stories.
We're sick of these lights and flashing lights, and maybe a cop saw it, maybe it was a helium balloon. Yeah. Let's get into a good old-fashioned some guy picked up one of our red-blooded American women and had her way with him. Or him.
Alien
Let's
rape.
Hear one of these good
alien operations.
Okay. One of these alien abduction stories. Let's
stuck
hear
some,
that.
Stuck some tubes up somebody's nose.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the popular notion that these people are having some kind of sex on board the UFOs, well, that's kind of blown out of proportion. Most of these folks are not engaging in any kind of physical act. In fact, as they report it, they're usually in some kind of state of paralysis, and eggs or sperm are extracted from them unwillingly. So it's not at all kind of Mars needs women scenario.
Okay, if we can't have sex, let's go with violence. When was the last time a rash of these, when they cut open a cow and they suck all the blood, what do you call those things?
Cattle mutilation.
When was the last time we had a good old-fashioned cattle and or sheep mutilation?
I think Charles has some information.
Charles Stewart of the Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge here on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show with the latest cattle mutilation info.
Dateline, New Mexico.
Yeah, this is, I got this out of USA Today about a week ago. It doesn't have a lot of details, but it's the latest one. It says, New Mexico, Taos. The State Livestock Board is investigating two recent cases of cattle mutilation where body parts were removed. At least 30 cases from 93 and 94 remain under investigation. And
you want violence? That's violence against animals, and nobody likes that.
Greg from Latonia, you're on the air with Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show and some friends from TASC.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Okay, how are you?
Not bad.
You sound like you're calling us from a tin can with a string attached to it.
An old rotary phone, actually.
Speak up a little bit. What's on your mind there, Greg?
Well, I had a couple questions and a couple comments. All right, my first question was, do you think the finding of this meteorite with the fossils inside of it of the organisms, do you think this goes against anybody's beliefs that they have in God? Or do you think that maybe God had created these organisms?
Well, you know, my estimation in these situations is that the more that we find life in the universe, the more interesting God becomes anyway, because now he's much more interesting, because he's doing it not just here, he's doing it everywhere. And, you know, if that goes against your belief, then I think you got to get your head out of the sand and recognize that there's a greater reality around us in the universe anyway.
Uh-huh. Have you seen that TV show called Alien Autopsy?
Yes.
Do you believe that's true?
I think probably it's a hoax.
Okay.
From what I can see in these bits and pieces, I don't see anything that shows me an extraterrestrial being cut up. What I see is probably perhaps some kind of unfortunate human being who was being tested on for whatever purposes the military might have had. But it doesn't appear to me to be anything from another planet.
Well, I would say it's probably a hoax, but I see no real evidence that it is. I'm not sure about it being a human being because the intestines and everything they took out of it were they didn't look human to me, but it could be a human being that was doctored up. I don't know, but I see no real evidence that it is a hoax, but it's just one of those things we might never know the answer to.
Now at TASC, Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge, you guys collect stories of UFOs, paranormal, things like that. Mix them all up, try to figure out which ones are legitimate, which ones are hoaxes, debunk the ones that are hoaxes, and get them out of the mix and focus in on real events that have happened that are unexplainable. What are some of the things that have happened that have really piqued your interest that you have not come up with an answer for?
Well,
there have been. Last year I received two reports. One was from a relative of mine, who I can vouch for.
It's not the guy in the rock band, is it?
No.
Because if it's the guy in the rock band, it doesn't count.
No. It's related to him, though.
Charles has a brother in the rock band, by the way.
Okay. But she says she saw a classic daylight disc over Cincinnati last summer.
Couldn't it have been somebody's Frisbee?
Yeah, it could have been, but she said it was like a half a mile up, and it was moving like 1,000 miles an hour, so...
Damn.
The guy had quite an arm if it was a Frisbee.
That's quick.
And,
anybody else see it, or just that one lady relative of yours?
Well, probably somebody else saw it, but, I mean, who reports these things? You know, I think 99% of them don't get reported. I just found out about this by accident from a third party, and I called her up and talked to her. That's how most of our cases go. We just find out about them by accident. Who knows how many out there don't get reported.
Now, if somebody sees a UFO and you want to report it, because that's what you should do as a good, God-fearing American citizen, who should you call? Do you call your local police? Do you call look up some UFO hotline? You call the Pentagon? Who should I call if I go out and driving home tonight and I get abducted?
Well, I'd say call us.
Yeah.
What's your phone number once again?
Okay, you can call 941-6912. And I'd be happy to listen to any sightings you might have. Bear in mind that I just don't accept things at face value, and I will be you know, glad to look into it for you.
Now, if you got one of those stickers by your phone, it's got 911 and a fire and an ambulance and your doctor, you can add to it 941-6912, write UFO next to it, and when you see a UFO, call them up and tell them about it. Shouldn't they call the cops, too?
Well,
we at the Chris and Rob Talk Show, we do believe cops are worthless, but should we call the cops if we see a UFO or somebody else?
The odd thing that happens is that the police probably won't do much except, you know, ask them what kind of soda pop they were drinking. But other than that, the interesting thing is if you call the Air Force, they'll tell you to call the state police. And then the state police will take a minimal report of some sort. And that's as far as it goes. You know, there are no real channels to get this stuff recorded. And the best way we know how is trying to get people aware of our group.
It's a Chris and Rob late night talk show. I'm going to shift gears on you a little bit because we have a real live author on the phone. This guy wrote a book called Forbidden Archaeology, and it's about old human beings, cavemen, and whatever we had before that. Michael Cremo, hello. Welcome to the Chris and Rob late night talk show.
Good evening.
How you doing tonight, sir?
Just fine. How are you?
Now, you wrote, oh, we're doing great. We've been talking about UFOs tonight. We would have called you earlier, but we were talking to Dr. Seth Shostak at the SETI Institute about that meteorite that was just found down in Antarctica. I'm sure you heard about that by now.
No, I didn't have a look at the papers today.
Check it out. They found a meteorite down in Antarctica, but we covered that already. You wrote a book called Forbidden Archaeology. Lay your thesis on us real quick. What's the book supposed to propose?
Well, the book looks at the entire history of archaeology and anthropology. Now, according to what you read in your standard textbooks, human beings like you and me have only been on this planet for about 100,000 years or so, and before that there would have been only more ape-like ancestors. But according to many traditional sources, such as the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, which I get a lot of my personal inspiration from, they tell us that human beings like ourselves have been on this planet for millions and millions of years. So I thought, if there's any truth to those accounts and those ancient writings, there should be some physical evidence to back them up. So, as I said, you won't find any of that evidence in the current textbooks, but I spent 8 years looking into the entire history of archaeology and anthropology, and what I found is quite astounding. Over that 150 years, scientists have found much evidence that proves that human beings have been on this planet for hundreds of millions of years, just as these ancient writings say.
Now, slow down a minute. We see cave pictures, and these cavemen or whoever drew pictures of themselves fighting maybe woolly mammoths or something. But we don't see any cave drawings of cavemen fighting Tyrannosaurus Rex, do we?
Well, that leads to an interesting question, because people always want to know, did human beings exist at the time of the dinosaurs? And according to your standard textbooks, the answer would be a definite no. But the evidence that I uncovered in my research in forbidden archaeology shows that human beings did exist at the time of the dinosaurs, and even before. For example, there's a scientific magazine called The Geologist, and in the last century, there was a very interesting report in this magazine. It told of a human skeleton that was found 90 feet below the surface in solid coal, and this skeleton was found in Macoupin County, Illinois. And from that report, I was able to find out exactly where this discovery took place. So I asked the Geological Survey of the state of Illinois how old the coal is in that spot, and they told me that it's about 300 million years old, and that puts this discovery before the Jurassic period. Now, the Jurassic, since that movie Jurassic Park, everybody has heard this word Jurassic. That's the age of the dinosaurs. So this discovery that was made in Illinois, 300 million years old, is older than the Jurassic.
Now, what kind of a human skeleton was it? Was it your typical, everyday, now?
Yeah, it was anatomically modern.
So it wasn't like Neanderthal man or some other kind of caveman?
No, it was an anatomically modern human. That's what the report says.
So does Neanderthal man and Cro-Magnon, all those guys, they
existed.
Evolved separately from different...
They existed. I'm not saying they didn't exist. Say if you look at these ancient writings, Sanskrit writings from India, they actually tell of ape-man-like creatures that existed in the past, but human beings like ourselves existed alongside of them. In other words, they coexisted. It's not that we evolved from those creatures, rather we've seem to have coexisted with them on this planet for quite a long time.
As they evolved and got more modern, then did our ancestors start breeding with them, and thus the two branches were fused into one?
Well, yeah, see, this gets us into the whole question of where the human race comes from. Now, if you look at these ancient Sanskrit writings from India, they say that in this universe there are 400,000 human species, not just one. And there's actually, the evidence actually suggests that if we want to understand our origins, it's a little bit more complicated. We tend to want a very simple story.
Do you take a divine creation approach like the Bible and Christianity
suggests? Yeah, either the simple divine creation report of the Bible, where everything just happens instantaneously, or the very simple account that the modern scientists gave, that somehow or other, you know, you get some simple form of life emerging in the oceans, and then it sort of transforms itself without any outside help into animals and finally human beings. It's a very simplistic account.
Did you do your research and publish the book out of a religious inspiration or out of scientific inquisition?
Well, out of both. As I said, in the beginning of the show, I'm a member of the Bhaktivedanta Institute, which is the science studies branch of the International Society for Krishna consciousness. So I do get my inspiration, as I said, from these ancient Sanskrit writings of India.
Now,
and
what
tell quite an amazing story. It actually has elements of all the different accounts of human origins that we find in the world today. It has an element of divine creation in it. It has an element of evolution in it, and it has an element of extraterrestrial intervention, and it all combined together, because you really do have, there does appear to be some overall design or guidance to the system, and you have a cosmic hierarchy of beings at the top of which you find some intelligent designer or creator, but this intelligent designer doesn't just pop everything into existence from nothing, as some of the biblical creation accounts say.
What evidence do you have?
There is a process of evolution, but instead of starting with the most simple one-celled creatures, you start out with the more intelligent ones, and then by kind of a process of guided genetic engineering, these more advanced intelligent beings, by a process of reproduction and modification, produce the other living creatures in the universe, including ourselves, and they populate the different planets with them. And then there is apparently some contact between the creatures living on the different planets. For example, these ancient Sanskrit writings, they do talk about vimanas, or spaceships that traveled from one planet to another. And they do talk about contacts between the human species living on one planet and other planets, and the human beings living on our Earth, and even there are some reproduction processes going on there. So that if you want to understand where the human beings on our planet came from, you would have to take all these things into account, some kind of superior intelligence, a cosmic hierarchy of beings, some kind of reproduction with modification going on, and extraterrestrial contact.
Now, is all this in your book, Michael Cremo, A Forbidden Archaeology?
Not in forbidden archaeology. In forbidden archaeology.
Because all this about the Indian Sanskrit and all this, the extraterrestrials, is that in the book?
No, that's in my next book, which I'm calling Human Devolution. See, the problem is that today there's a certain idea that's being promoted very heavily and propagandized very heavily. And that idea is that we have evolved on this planet fairly recently by a simple material process from more ape-like ancestors. That's what you'll find taught in the schools. That's what you'll see when you go to the Natural History Museum. That's what you'll find when you open up the science textbooks. And that's what's being promoted by our government.
Michael Cremo, give us some of this evidence now, because I almost wanted to stop you three or four times there. Like, well, prove that or prove that. What kind of evidence do you have to support all this that you just laid on us? The extraterrestrials, 400,000 species of human beings, which I find curious.
Well, this gets you into the whole UFO alien question. There's been quite a bit of what I regard as very good evidence for the existence. Say, if you study these UFO reports, you'll find reports of more than one kind of being. You'll find descriptions of some very short beings, the standard grays, but then you'll find also descriptions of very tall Nordic sort of beings. And as you go through the whole literature on UFOs and aliens and abductions and things of that sort, you'll find that there are many types of creatures described. So this gives very good confirmation of the information that you find not only in these modern UFO reports, but in ancient writings, such as these ancient Sanskrit writings from India, that say that, yep, there is more than one humanoid species in the universe.
Now, how did the guys from India, the Indians, know this?
Well, of course, this doesn't come just from them. It comes from every culture in the world. If you look
at the writings, how did it get lost somewhere here upon the European colonization of the free world?
Well, I think science took a wrong turn about 200 or 300 years ago. Now, if you go back 200 or 300 years ago, even in Europe, you'll find that the scientists, they believed in a multidimensional universe. They believed in this cosmic hierarchy of beings. Now, they may have used different names.
They
may
also
have called them
minotaurs,
angels or demons or something like that. But they described a whole cosmic hierarchy of beings.
Well, they believed in dragons and elves, too.
Right. So this information was there. But around 200 or 300 years ago, science took a wrong turn. It started getting very materialistic. It started focusing on only part of human experience, the part of human experience that could be controlled and dominated in the laboratories. And that was very effective because you got a lot of technology coming out of it and a lot of industry. But what happened is they started ignoring huge areas of human experience and building a huge wall to protect their limited view of what's really going on in the universe, so that all of this subject matter has suddenly become out of bounds, whether we're talking about forbidden archaeology or forbidden psychology or forbidden UFOs. These are all subject matters that are out of bounds.
We're talking to Michael Cremo, the author of Forbidden Archaeology, on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We have Terry and Charles from Tri-State TASC, Tri-State Association for Scientific Knowledge, and they'd like to address a couple of questions to you, Dr. Cremo.
All right. I'm not a doctor, by the way.
You're
Mr. Cremo. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just curious. You mentioned, 400,000 species. Are you talking like galaxy-wide, or are we talking just on this planet?
Galaxy-wide.
It sounds like Klingons and Vulcans and Mr. Spock and everything.
That's right. That reflects that's a very popular entertainment show, but I think there's a reflection of the truth in it.
So it sounds like we've got a pretty crowded galaxy here.
Well, and that's what's reflected in the modern UFO reports, and it's also reflected in traditional wisdom sources down through history. in the world. So I think it's kind of interesting that if you look at the very, very ancient sources of wisdom and you look at the latest modern UFO and alien reports, that basically you find a commonality in them. It seems like they're talking about the same thing. They're looking at the same phenomenon. And I think that's a very good confirmation that what they're talking about really is there.
I'm still kind of curious to how these ancient wise men were able to come up with this information without the help of radio telescopes or high frequency this and that. How did they come across this? Was this just sort of
Well, even today, I think you'll find that a lot of the reports for this stuff are not coming from people with radio telescopes. They're coming from, for example, I was just in Europe where I was giving some talks about my book, Forbidden Archaeology, and after one of the talks, a gentleman came up to me and introduced himself as a pilot for one of the major airlines, and he confided to me that he had seen some of these things, UFOs, and he had pointed them out to his crew members. For example, he was flying one night at a very high altitude in a commercial jetliner, and he reported to me that he saw a brilliant object coming toward him. And he was also a military pilot, so he was very expert at judging the rate of closure of flying objects. And he could tell that at the rate that this object was closing with him, coming from head on, that it was much faster, many times faster than any jet aircraft that he had seen. And then he said when it approached him, when it came right up to his level, it went straight up. And then he saw it hovering in the sky, and then it blinked out. And he pointed this out to his crewmates. But of course, he never reported that through any official channels because he was afraid of losing his job. Now that wasn't... So a lot of these reports, they come from people not armed with the radio telescopes and things like that. If you look at this modern literature of UFO and alien reports, you'll find that it's coming from people who see these things with their ordinary senses. So I think the same was true in the past. And I think the fact that people today are independently, like people who have no knowledge whatsoever of any ancient writings and have never read them, are reporting the same things that are reported in these ancient writings. I think that shows that there's something out there that people from all different times and places have been noticing and speaking about, and that, to me, tends to show that it's a real phenomenon.
Mr. Cremo, is it your opinion that in the past, say, thousands or even millions of years ago, man had advanced technology, perhaps even equivalent to today's technology, and it was wiped out by some kind of a cataclysm or?
Well, I think the evidence does suggest that there have been several cataclysms, that civilizations have come and gone repeatedly over the course of tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of years. This is what these ancient writings tell us, and this is what you appear to find if you really look at the archaeological record. Of course, one thing is that a lot of our very advanced technology is made of metal and plastics and things like that. So those things actually don't last very long. Most people are surprised to hear this, but most metals will corrode very rapidly. But there are some interesting things. Gold, for example, is a very stable metal and doesn't corrode. That's why it's so valuable. Now here's a case that I encountered in a newspaper. It's called the Morrisonville Times, and it was dated 1896. And it told of a woman living in Morrisonville, Illinois, right here in the United States. And she was putting some coal into her coal-burning stove. And some of the pieces were very big, so she was breaking them in half. And when she broke one of these pieces of coal in half, she saw an exquisitely worked piece of gold chain. And it was firmly embedded in the coal, because when she broke the coal apart, She said she could grab the chain, and both pieces of the coal were hanging, you know, from the ends of the chain. She had grabbed the chain by the middle. And I was able to find out from the report where that coal came from. So we got in contact with the Geological Survey of the state of Illinois, and we asked them, well, how old is the coal from that particular mine? And they said it was over 300 million years old. So you do have examples like this of not only, you know, stone tools and things being found, but you know, some things that show the existence of a more advanced culture, such as gold jewelry. Now, the you know, just to think that there may have been people living in the area that we currently call the United States 300 million years ago, you know, wearing gold jewelry. This is, according to what you'll learn in the science textbook, this is completely out of the question, but the evidence is there, and I document it in my book, Forbidden Archaeology.
Well, it's good to know we had B-boys on Earth 300 million years ago. Michael Cremo, we got to let you go. We got to make room for the next show here on WAIF, but we appreciate you talking to us here.
Well, thank you. It was really great.
And what's the name of the book?
Forbidden Archaeology.
All right. Thank you very much.
It's a big, heavy book, too. The thing's about 60 million pages long. Tri-State Task, what do you boys think of Forbidden Archaeology?
Well, I think he raises some interesting questions, although I'm still kind of curious as to how he, you know, how he supports those claims.
This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I thought he was kind of whacked out myself. Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We're on the way out of here. The Rhyme Time Rhyme Syndicate will be in next with a little old school flavor. Maybe human beings didn't come from Earth or Mars. Maybe they came from Planet Claire. You think that's a possibility?
Sure.
We'll be back next week, so tune in, turn out, and drop in. Catch you later. WAIF, Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, over and out. Stay tuned. 88 is in the house.
Is Chester on his way? Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so hang tight, everybody.